They went to the viewing screen and discovered the same man that they had met 3 days before, standing about 20 meters away, looking upwards at the ship. Arskit and Maia exited the craft and the man walked forwards, stretching out his hand to them. He forcefully shakes Arskit's hand and then Maya's hand as he expresses his surprise at their ship and introduces himself as Gypsy Ustinov. He asks if they are from Venus or Mars and they tell him that Maia is from Earth and Arskit is from another world. Arskit considers what to do with Gypsy, who says that he did not wish to interfere in the activities of God's angels and explains that he is a devout Christian. She says that she is sorry to disappoint him because she is neither an angel nor acting on God's orders. She tells him that those stories are misleading by wicked elements who seek to use religious concepts for evil purposes. She also says that when he is a believer of religion, then he has fallen for evil heresies. Gypsy is shocked by this. Arskit then invites him to come with them in order for him to learn the truth. Gypsy confesses to be afraid of dying, and when he tries to quote a passage from Jesus, Arskit tells him that the correct name for Jesus was Chmanuel. After many deliberations, Maia leads Arskit back to the ship in disgust of Gypsy until he asks for them to wait. Many words are exchanged before Gypsy agrees to come with them. They enter the craft and Gypsy sits in terror until he finally calms down and remembers that he left his belongings at his campsite. So, he exited the ship and was gone for more than an hour before returning with all of his belongings. Arskit explained that they would be traveling for the next week into the past and future in order to observe certain events in time. The first destination would be back to the 13th century. Reluctantly, Gypsy agrees to go. But when Arskit asks him to remain silent about all that he sees, including ever having seen Arskit and Maia, Gypsy complains that it would prevent him from becoming rich by selling his story to the magazines. He is told that if he were to speak about this, he would have a short time to live. When Gypsy asks why it is so important for him to remain silent, he is told that it depends upon the existence of mankind on Earth and the whole universe. So, he agrees to remain silent. The ship rapidly ascends into space. Gypsy's face becomes white and he vomits into a pot from his belongings. For a moment, everything appears to disappear and then Arskit announces that they have arrived in the 13th century. Maia attached the language translation device to his belt and they all exited the ship. Gypsy ran about 50 meters into the forest. Everything appears normal except for the sounds of many birds and the air seemed fresher with more oxygen and no pollution. All that could be seen were only forests, hills, and meadows with no house or village anywhere. There were a herd of deer that took no notice of them in this beautiful paradise. Arskit explained that they were in 13th century France during the reign of Louis the Holy. They all walked through the forest toward a small recuperation house that Arskit knew about from previous visits. It belonged to a rabbi by the name of Jetcheli who was known as a scientist, sorcerer, and magician. There was a horse tied up behind the house and a dog barked inside. A door opened and a bearded man came out and went quickly towards the three advancing people. Arskit introduced the two men to Jetcheli. She explained that they were from a far away land and also far into the future. He asked about the device on Maya's belt and was told that it was an electric lamp with batteries. Maia shows it to him and he is very amazed by it. Maia gives it to him as a gift along with four batteries and Gypsy explains how it works to him while Maia and Arskit take a stroll through the meadow. When they return, 5 hours later, Gypsy tells them that Jetcheli is very clever and plans to create a dynamo for creating electricity and intends to provide protection for his house. Arskit laughs at how Jetcheli will certainly go into history as a secretive magician. Gypsy is now interested in researching French history to see if this is true. He asks Arskit if he can take with him some gifts given to him by Jetcheli for historical worth and she agrees. But, she says that they will not grow old inside her ship. They returned to her ship for another 6 days of traveling to different events into the past and future to see things that will never be agreeable to historians or scientists. Explanation of reactions to 6 days of time travels. Mayo had to recognize many scientific theses of his time to be completely untrue, as well as many events of history. Often he believed himself to be dreaming because it all seemed crazy and unbelievable. Many times he felt the need to test his reality and always found that he was not dreaming or hallucinating. Gitche also had difficulty accepting everything. Often, he would angrily mark out whole chapters in his Bible with red crayon and curse all the while. It troubled him greatly to discover things were completely different than had been written in the Bible, and grew to become hostile against religion. Next, here is Mayer's contact with Chmanuel and Gitche's reactions. Explanation of Mayer's contact with Chmanuel. Askit tells Mayer and Gitche that because they have gathered the necessary perceptions from their different travels into the past and understand the need to keep everything confidential, they will now travel back to the year 32 in order to learn that what is written in the New Testament is false. Gitche realizes that this is the year of Christ's crucifixion and becomes angry over having to witness it, since he has come to realize how religion has been created by power, hungry people to exploit humanity. Mayer warns him to be nicer to Askit and reminds him that he forced himself upon them and agreed to come along. He is told that only he is to blame for having been led astray by religious heresies and not seeing it for what it truly is. The mistake was in converting religion into a cult and being governed by principles of delusion. Religion is not bad in itself, only what has been done in connection to unreal principles. When Gitche says that he will choke Chmanuel, pronounced Y-M-N-U-L, when he sees him, Mayer tells him that he will not do so because Chmanuel is a wonderful human being who cannot help having been used against his will as the foundation of a new religion. Gitche apologizes and says that his emotions have overcome him. Askit gives the men clothing from her home world to wear under native clothing of the period that they will be traveling to, and they dress accordingly. They all carry the language translator. Then, Askit guided the ship into the year 32. Their landing site was the same location as where they had left in Jordan. It appeared nearly the same except for changes in the mountain range, villages, and the small town of Jerusalem. They exited the ship and walked through rugged mountains for 4 days toward a small walled village. They ate food that Gitche procured before their start, and Askit acquired a bag of coins of that period. During their long walk, Askit explained how to behave and not appear conspicuous to others, until they reached the Mount of Olives near Jerusalem, in front of the village of Bethphage. They noticed some men coming their way. Askit said she knew that Chmanuel and his followers would be walking past this way at this time. Gitche becomes excited and angry that Mayer is so calm. Mayer tries to calm him, but to no avail. So, Mayer hits him in his nose and causes it to bleed. This brings Gitche to his senses once again, and he apologizes for his behavior. The group of men sat near a path and Chmanuel walked toward them. They exchanged greetings in peace. Chmanuel directs Gitche to go over to the other men who will nurse his injury. Without a word, he obeys and the men care for him. Chmanuel calls Mayer by their name of Edward and indicates that he knows of Askit. He also compliments Mayer for his actions because Gitche had lost control over his senses and was in need of pain. Mayer is impressed and says that he now knows why Chmanuel is thought of as a god, like Superman. They exchange compliments and sit together on a stone to talk. Chmanuel explains that he knows them through the force of his spirit and is able to foresee these times. He is surprised that Mayer understands about his clairvoyant abilities and recognizes Mayer's ability to do the same. He says that living provides for many things and that it is necessary to walk their own way with honor, under the laws. Chmanuel agrees to answer some burning question from Mayer before he asks them. He says that the lessons that he gives to others are not new and are well known to the scribes, who disregard, distort, and interpret them for their own purposes. They abuse him with their lies because he preaches against their lies. They have constructed cults out of the old lessons of creation laws and the laws of the spirit, which take away the freedom of the spirit and force their followers into bondage for profit. They have committed heresy by humanizing the creation as a human being which they call God. Their God is a ruler over humanity and all of his dominion. It is never allowed to be equal to the creation, for it is considered to be above everything else and nothing else exists. They accuse him of lying because he offers the truth and the truth is not always requested. When someone like him speaks about the truth, he will be hated and persecuted. Jmanuel says that he will not escape persecutions, for this is his destiny. He tells Meir that he will also be persecuted because he will perform his mission in the future as Jmanuel has done. He says that his coming days will be very difficult and he feels pain and bitterness inside because he knows what lies ahead. But, he will not evade his destiny. People of this world have been forced into need and confusion by the wrong lessons of scribes, preachers, and all of those who walk in their footsteps. He says that, truly, this will lead the world into very much need and misery. The scribes and preachers are hypocrites that preach lies, deceit, and distortions of the truth. Outwardly, they appear as being pious and good, but inside they are full of hypocrisy, deceit, and falsehoods. They are worse than any snake. They want to be great in spirit, but yet they have no brains. All those who are just have been murdered by them, from the first prophet whom their fathers and forefathers killed, to those that they will murder in the future. They murder in the name of love and goodness, but actually do so for profit and power. They have altered the lessons of spirit and the laws of creation into a very wicked cult and cause humanity to worry about death, revenge by their blood, greedy God, and angels armed with swords. They educate humanity to fear the magnificence and unity of creation. They deny its existence and substitute it with their God and saints. This is truly the way things are, and the future will become very evil. There will be fear and howling in the world. Innocent human beings will be sacrificed and their blood will deeply soak the dry earth. The fate of this world and humanity will truly become very hard. Jmanuel is righteous and fights against injustice, which is thought to be evil within him. Yet, he knows the truth, the wisdom of the knowledge, and has the force of spirit to fulfill his mission. No amount of hate against him will cause him to go astray. The truth is more important than the temporary pain of the body, which may be tortured and damaged, but the truth and spirit can never be killed. Even though one can see this truth in him now, this will change in the future. From his having been a human being, a cult will cause very evil consequences. He will be slandered as being equal to the creation. Although he knows of these things occurring in the future, he cannot change them. He will live as a human being, perform his mission, and suffer his fate of bodily death after 83 years. Although his body will be very old, his spirit will remain unbroken. The coming event will change nothing except for being thought of as a martyr. The event causes only bodily pains, which will drift away by force of the spirit, and he will end his mission. Jmanuel recognizes how sensitive Meir is to be able to understand his grief, which is something that no one else has been able to do. He notices how far Meir has progressed in his evolution in comparison to others in his world. He considers Meir to be well educated with very high spiritual abilities, which is something that he had not realized before. Meir asks if he has written down any of his lessons for posterity. Jmanuel says that only certain circles of society are able to write. He has learned to read, but does not have the time to write down his lessons. His lessons are actually the lessons of all great times, of spirit, and of the laws of creation, which are eternal. These are things that he learned while he was in India. So, the lessons that he preaches are not originally from him. He knows that his lessons will be altered, but there is no chance to change the coming events because the masses of erring and distorting human beings are too large. However, the truth will not be lost because it will remain in written form at a secure place. Among his followers, he has a scribe, by the name of Judas Iscariot, who writes down the important parts of the lessons and events, which will be well preserved and shall endure times in order to transmit the truth for posterity. He tells Meir that the scripts will be found in his time and that he will reveal their contents for all of mankind. although humanity will not be mature enough for them at that time, within 2 decades, a grain of truth will find a bit of nutritious ground. Meir asks where the scripts are hidden and if he could retrieve them in his time. Jmanuel says that he knows where they will be hidden and, at a later point in time, he will tell Meir the exact place. But, it is not provided for him to take the scripts from their hiding place as this is provided for someone else. At first, the scriptures will be doubted and accused of being lies and falsifications, but the eternal truth will overcome all. Many attempts will be made to cast its truth and authenticity in diffused light and falsity. One lie will be that, although the scripts are of worth and contain certain truths, they do not contain the actual lessons because they are the lessons of someone else with the name of Jmanuel. Another lie will be that he is not Jmanuel, but someone else. It will also be pretended that Jmanuel and Jesus Christ are 2 different persons. But, this will only be accepted by ignorant and misguided spirits. The breakthrough of truth in the future has already become destiny. There is now a search being conducted for the scripts, to destroy and use them as proof against him. One scriptural was stolen from the writer and was given to the preachers and scribes. A preacher's son named Judah Iriath seized it secretly out of the bag of Judas Iscariot in order to sell it for 70 silverlings to the bailiffs. It will be used to accuse Jmanuel of blasphemy. He ordered Judas Iscariot to write the scripture another time and preserve it well so that it endures the future times. When Meir asks if Judas is the one that is said to be a traitor, Jmanuel confirms this, but says that he is not the culprit. The one who will surrender him to the bailiffs is the same one who stole the writings and sold them. His father will spread the lie that Judas is the traitor in order to preserve the preacher's name of Iriath. It will be said that, because one of his followers betrayed him to die on the cross, his lessons cannot be true. But, it will be Judah Iriath who hangs himself in the bloody acre. Jmanuel warns Meir that he will be accused of lying, and of blasphemy, but that he should not care about that because he has learned a lot in his previous life and has learned the truth about Moses, which will enable him to stand up to his enemies. Those who will accuse him will be totally unreasonable and not be able to recognize the truth for themselves. Meir's meeting with Jmanuel will seem to others to be monstrous and fantastic, for they will not be mature enough to conceive of the whole truth. His worst enemies will be those from the cultic circles who are lost to their heresies and all sense of reality. Jmanuel tells Meir that he is aware of how people in his time wrongly believe him to be the personification of the creation and the savior because of deep spiritual darkness. He warns Meir that many of these people will make attempts on his life. So, he must be watchful and protect himself from them. Their actions are always directed toward a fanatical demand for blood. Meir is also told to beware of his critics and those who believe themselves to be knowledgeable about all things and live for their own silly perceptions of the world. Outwardly, they appear to be very educated, but inwardly, they are poor in spirit, ignorant, and full of evil thoughts. During Meir's time, all human unreasonableness and cultic heresies reach their height of power. When Meir tells Jmanuel about him being called Jesus Christ in the New Testament, he says that this is a false name and an evil abuse because, until that time, that name has never been spoken. Only at a later time, will that name be originated by a human being with a confused spirit. The Paulus is one of his worst enemies for designating him as the creation and using Christianity as the foundation for his own wrongful religion of Paulinity. Being named as Jesus Christ grieves Jmanuel very much as he never wanted to be called this. This name will be spoken by mislead human beings who live in spiritual confusion and are unable to come to terms with the truth. However, he knows that this is inevitable for human development as mankind must first go wrong in order to find the truth. Only truth. Conscious individuals will call him by his correct name. He offers lessons of truth for all of eternity and performs no injustice by this. But, when someone refers to him as Jesus Christ, they are accusing him of injustice and lies. Many will not believe this because their understanding about the truth is incorrect. They will say that these are only half-truths that only serve to find the real truth. This is true when all things are considered, as many ways do lead to the truth. But, what is offered is the truth in the truth. This truth does not lead to the truth, but is the eternal truth. It can never be altered and always keeps the same worth. It is the final, existing, and eternal truth for all periods, whereas religious truths are changed constantly. Meir asks if it is proper for people to celebrate his birthday as Christmas. Schmanuel says that many feasts are celebrated in honor of important people who have died. However, this is no more than a cult function, and a means to enrich a few others. Honor should be given to those worthy of it and to preserve the memory of those who have passed on. It should never be given in the form of religious cults or for riches. The Christian religion is interspersed with many kinds of heresies and falsehoods about his birth. His birth is celebrated on the 24th of December each year, but it is actually the day of a bloodthirsty false deity from Persian lands and does not even come close to his date of birth. The future counting of time does not correspond with reality or of his time of birth. From Meir's understanding of time, Schmanuel's date of birth was the third day of the second month. This date was changed because of wrong transmissions, false conceptions, and the novelties within the counting of time. Meir asks why Schmanuel often uses the word truly when he speaks and is told that it is used to substantiate his words. It is only a peculiarity, just as everyone speaks with different expressions. By interspersing this word, he is able to bypass many descriptive words that would need long interpretations. So, he uses truly to mean, it is as I say, it is the truth, it really behaves so, and it keeps its integrity. Schmanuel notices how much Meir is educated in spiritual matters and that he lives ahead of his own time by about 300 years. Because of this, he is told that he will suffer greatly in his time because humanity's spiritual knowledge will be at its lowest beginnings. Meir asks Schmanuel how far ahead that his spiritual knowledge is in relation to his time and is told that he lives in Meir's future time. He states that his spiritual development is 2,000 years ahead of his time and that Meir is 300 years ahead of his time, which makes them both at about the same level of development. Schmanuel also says that, during Meir's time, he will not be active on Earth as he is in the year 32, but that he will occupy himself with other missions that will not cause him to become too far evolved so that he can remain close to earthly concerns. At the time of his rebirth in the 20th century, Schmanuel will have a spiritual evolution level of only 128 years in advance of the world's time. But, with hard work during the next 20 years, this level will increase to 359 years in advance of his time and will eventually reach a level of 400 years when he leaves the earthly world and returns to another world. Meir asks Schmanuel how his lessons should be presented when the New Testament says that he is the Son of God, that God embodies the creation, that God is the Heavenly Father and Redeemer of mankind, etc. He is told that religion remains always wrong and only spirituality is truly justified. Religion and spirituality can only become united when the truth is purified again. Religion and spirituality can form a harmonic unit when dogmas and heresies have been removed and destroyed. People of Meir's time already recognize this profound truth and seek to replace the wrong, purely religious facts with spiritual forms. But, their spiritual forces still stay at their infancy and they remain captured by cultic religions. They have much confusion and are unable to separate the wheat from the chaff. Unfortunately, they always search for the truth along wrong pathways and do not recognize that it lays much nearer to them than they assume. It will be very difficult to convince humanity of the truth. It will always be obtained by fighting. Meir asks why Schmanuel has not spoken at all with Askit, who just sits nearby and listens to their words. He expresses concern that she might feel slighted and left out. Schmanuel recognizes his feelings for her, but assures him that she is there in peace with the knowledge that they are all equal and that no one feels left out of their circle. She has brought Maya there into the past so that he could recognize the truth. She already knows it in great detail and needs no explanations. Arsket agrees and Maya is calmed by this. Jmanuel says that their time for the present day is over and that he must go on his way, but they will meet again and speak further about many other things. Arsket, Maya, and Jitchi follow Jmanuel and his group. Jitchi had made friends with the followers of Jmanuel and no longer cared about Arsket and Maya. Unfortunately, the notes about all that occurred thereafter were lost and Maya was unable to recover them. Explanation of reactions to 6 days of time travels. After they had visited with Jmanuel to witness the true events in the year 32, they returned to the current period of time for the last time and Jitchi became mad. He ran amok and began to hate religion as a pestilence. This was a man who, a week before, was a good Christian that believed in the redemption, God, and Jesus Christ. Because of Arsket's insistence, much of what occurred during their time travels must be kept secret in order to hide truths that are too hard to bear and allow events to occur for the natural evolution of mankind. They concern things about Jmanuel which have been wickedly falsified in order to cause a mass psychosis and create religions. Chapter 2, First Contact. First contact with Samjace on Tuesday, January 28, 1975. At 1 p.m., Maya was occupied at home with trying to record tape, voices, which is something that he had been unsuccessful at for the last 2 months. Suddenly, there was a force inside of him which caused him to hear a voice that slowly became understandable to him. The voice was very peaceful and familiar to Maya even though he had never heard it before. Suddenly, he understood the symbolic pictures and words, which told him to take a camera and leave the house. He did as he was directed without questioning or understanding why. The voice seemed like a soft coercion. Maya got on his motorcycle and drove away. It seemed to him as though he was driving aimlessly, but was actually being guided to a certain place. He drove through the village of Hinwil, across fields, meadows, and forests until he reached an isolated area in the Freck Nature Preserve. There was a large moving van parked on a small road near the nature preserve region with the driver nowhere in sight. Maya looked at his watch and noticed that it was 2:12 p.m. Then, he heard a silent, yet familiar, peculiar stirring sound in the air, so he looked up into the cloudy sky. He did not expect to see what he saw because Arsket had told him that this would not occur for another year. From out of the clouds, an object rapidly descended and reduced its speed considerably. It slowly curved along at about 350 meters above the forest. The stirring completely stopped and Maya was able to see its exact form. It was disc-shaped with similar shapes on its top and bottom. However, the upper dome was somewhat larger than the base and was equipped with red, highly placed rectangles. Hastily, Maya seized his camera and took his first picture at 2:15 while the object was 150 meters away and flying about 150 meters above the ground. Then, the object rapidly sped away to the west and disappeared. The stirring resumed once again and the flying object rapidly returned and hovered about 100 meters above the truck. Maya was standing 44 meters away from the truck as he took his second photograph at 2:18. Then, the object moved again and suddenly stopped at about 50 meters above the ground and beyond the truck. However, it appeared as though the object was in the foreground and the truck was much further away. He could see that the object was not an earthly flying machine, but an extraterrestrial vehicle of unknown origin. The lower side of the disc appeared to vibrate with little waves running continuously in and through the underside of the ship. The skin appeared to be damaged and old like a washing board. Solid matter seemed to dissolve in the radiation of the waves. The truck became difficult to see as it looked like it was suddenly enveloped in heat waves. Then, the object sped away and rapidly ascended toward the east, disappearing into the clouds. The newly heard stirring quickly faded away and tranquility returned. Maya returned to his motorcycle, started it, and drove across the fields toward the edge of the east woods. He traveled about 250 meters into a large boggy clearing, got off his bike, and walked alone deep in his thoughts. He noticed the truck being driven away. While there alone, he noticed birds fighting and then they suddenly disappeared.